Do you remember when they were like, what was the name of that
Madonna.
Singer? Madonna.
Madonna had cones.
Well, bras were like that after all.
Anyway, you knew the Russian officers by those cones. And you know they had the uniform. So after school, we'd go to the black market. We had nothing to trade or whatever. Just after, for a Raffle Park was the park that was black market. I don't know, it was black market, but there were no police around, and people would give you saccharine for a quarter kilo of margarine or whatever, or silk stockings or something. And I would make out of, you know, circle, cut a circle, make a cone. So, it's sort of cardboardy stuff.
So you had pointy breasts.
I was a Russian officer in civil clothes, and I spoke German like Russian officers. In disguise with спасибо or пожалуйста, как выживать? And people, because I spoke German with a Russian accent, people thought, and I was in civil, and I was Russian. And honestly, it was sort of more fun because we couldn't buy anything or whatever we had to buy. But people would talk to us and help us understand, help me understand. The others are girls, we are just girls, but I was the only officer. And they would go away to you laughing. You, I know Lucy said once she wet herself because the Viennese would try and teach me how to say things properly, not with a Russian accent.
How did you come to learn Russian?
We had it at school, at the teacher's college, the last 3 months when the Russians came. And I was very interested, and I really learned it there. Well, there is a sound that is говорю. My is really down in the throat. And not many of my school colleagues could say, but I could say. And the more I said it, I guess the Russian people, like there were Russian soldiers also on the black market, and they just shook their head because they knew I was. But they complimented me on my pronunciation when I spoke Russian.
Are there any similarities at all between German and Russian?
No.
None.
Oh, I don't know. Apart from that it is a communication tool. No, none. Russian is more Slavic language. And because we had Latin, I knew the casusse, you know, like nominative, dative, accusative, da-da-da-da. And so I would build that into the clination or conjugation, whatever it's called, in the Russian too. And so the a person was a chemist who told us Russian at school. I was his star pupil, and he gave me a look or clues as to how declinate, like I, you, he, she, it, we, they, that stuff, you know. I just picked it up like a sponge. And so I remember well, I don't know if they knew me well or if they were all the same Russian, but on the Arrestle Park in the black market, when there were two or three, they would just come in little groups to see what they could score. And they just always. They didn't say anything. They just laughed and nodded. And it was just a nice entertainment, you know. Yeah. And I was really a bit a sort of a lost actress anyway. Because in all the Grill Parts plays and even Schiller, I was usually the protagonist. I don't know if it's called protagonist in the play as well. Because I could learn by heart, there is a poem called Schiller's Glocke, and he describes how the bell is being built. And it's about 28 pages poem. I knew it from A to Z.
Could you recite it?
Yeah. And we had a good German teacher, you know, like you have an English teacher. And she would have literature and poetry and that. And she was like an old witch, but she could very well bring about an ambience in the class, and I would say the soliloquist, and she would have, the class was in the dark because we would have German from 3 to 5, and from 4 to 5 was all dark, you know, especially in winter. And she would just have a candle there, and she would sit at her desk like a queen, and I would recite, you know, and the kids would be like, I think I worked a lot with pauses, and that's a very powerful in the road. And so I was always a little bit outside the box, but a little bit naughty too, because I hated the maths teacher. And before that, we had a maths teacher who was a good skier. And I loved her, and I knew everything about her. And then we got Herrn Ross, and he was as dramatic as I was. I don't know whether it was that I didn't like him, therefore. But he didn't like me, and I didn't like him. And so the Danube wasn't too far away. I'd be going sailing, only on the little boat with one sail, you know. And I had to repeat it, but not the class, the tasks that were given. I not just copied it before the next day or in the pause, in the interval. I was not a conscientious student or one that teachers would love. Apart from the geography teacher, she loved me about everything, the German and the philosophy and the chemistry. They thought, you know, either of them. And my mother always said, my father was worried what will become of me. And I reckon father would have said that to mother because I didn't know that he wasn't my father. That's what he meant. But mother wanted to make out that, you know, I'd be ending up in prison because I'm so bad.
So all of this time, the war was on that you're talking about?
No, that was after the war.
That was after the war.
The market, yeah, because the Russian occupation was already in Vienna in 1945.
How did you find out that the war was over?
Oh, on the radio. Yeah, people in the street announcing and crying and also, you know.
Did everyone have a radio?
We did. I don't know if everyone had a radio, but we had shortwaves, and that's how we got the London scene.
And did you have an inkling? Was there anything leading up to it that it was getting close?
Yeah. It was Hitler was dead and he wasn't dead and Eva Braun was dead and no, she wasn't, and they had kids and no, they didn't, they only had a dog and etc, etc. But then afterwards, I think the researchers, mainly British people, just, uncovered everything. But I think Hitler, in the end, did go a bit bananas. Mindset was no longer sound.
Or rational, no.
Yeah.
No. Did he have a big family in Germany?
Hitler. He had no children at all. He claimed that his testicles were shot off in the First World War. But I don't know to this day if it's true. So,
but would it have been shameful to have that name?
Hitler? It'd be shameful to have the name Adolf. Yeah, and my uncle, mother's brother, was a convinced National Socialist. Nazi is actually a bit bad. I don't know if poor people understand what Nazi stands for.
No,
but
what does it stand for?
National Socialism. That's N-A.
But it's socialism, but only internally. Yeah, it's not a...
International.
No. No, so everybody that's a Nazi should be equal.
Yes. That was one of the things with the Bayer Chalon did not agree with, understandably. But, that quality was similar to France, you know, egalitaire.
Yeah.
What's it called? Egalité. The three things
in French.
Liberty
and, yeah, quality, liberty, and justice.
And something else.
Yeah, and something else, yeah. Yeah, so did you see a predominance in hate speech before Hitler came into power?
No, Hitler came because probably people weren't too happy with the thing of Versailles, common.
Yeah,
I don't
the Treaty of Versailles.
The Treaty,
yeah.
Treaty of Versailles. And so they thought Hitler would do something about it. But the main thing why Hitler was so successful, because he ended joblessness.
Yeah.
He ended poverty. Everybody was employed. Even if it was in an ammunition factory, they were employed, you know. And if people can put some vegetable soup on the table, something.
Yeah.
It was done. It's the basic needs you fight for. And I don't know if you would say, I'm not having it, I'd rather starve to death. Not many, perhaps the people, but their kids, they wouldn't allow them to starve to death. Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
So it's really somebody who comes to his basic needs and all the propaganda, okay? Even, like, in my family, especially mother's side, because that was a big family with five boys and one girl. And they all said, Ernstl, you are a pessimist. And my father would say, no, I am a realist. He could foretell what happens. When they went hunting in Poland, my father said, they are just reconnoitering the territory. That's all. Ernstl, you're always pessimist. 7 months later, they had the war there, you know. But my father was educated and could think on his feet.
So I was speaking to some people in Germany who said that they believed that Hitler was one of the most organized people that has ever been, and that his planning was immaculate.
Yeah.
So he planned for years.
Yeah.
And everything he planned for came to fruition.
Yeah, and he chose the right officers for this and that. He must have chosen the personalities because they were so cruel and so heartless and so disciplined.
So what made them like that? There has to have been propaganda, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Which is the same as hate speech.
Yeah. The same as advertisement, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're bending one's mind. But if you give some bread with the mind bending, you swallow both.
Oh. Yeah. That's a really profound statement.
Yeah. When we were there in 1959, there was a massive display of march through Vienna. Mainly there were people who'd come from the Tyrol, and they marched through Vienna carrying flaming torches, and they were Nazis. There was a Nazi march through Vienna.
There is a Nazi on the rudder in Austria now. They call them Blue. The Nazis are called Blue. Blue Party. Strache is his name. Boy, I voted for the Greens in Austria because the leader of the Greens is von Lobenheim or something like that. A really educated man who is gentle and doesn't give the block for you to chew over. Also, I think our psychologist to see how much the brain can adjust without being pushed too much. Yeah, I think I really would do away with corruptions because everybody has got a mother and a father and they tell them what's right and what's wrong. But when they grow up, they become bankers and they have Cayman Island and, you know, and what happened? Because they were brainwashed, because they are greedy, because they have no conscience, because they are the chosen ones, etc. All these in-the-air statements that amount to nothing if it comes to life or death, you know. And my father told me that there was in a concentration camp somebody who left bread in their cupboard, and the person who was looking after that bread died of hunger, but he did not touch the bread. It was quite a famous story. I don't think it was Auschwitz or Ravensbrück. It was another one in Poland, I think. And I often think of these heroes who are so selfless. And there are others in Parliament reigning for the people, but never refuse an increase in salary that amounts to a year's salary for somebody or new start or pension, you know. It's such a multifaceted problem to keep people true and honest, because I was very keen on, you know, the Adelaide guy, ex-Xenophon. And you told me, no, he's a traitor like the rest of that. Do you remember? And I hadn't followed that up. So what makes people, is it us who say that's a bad, but not for him, it's just pragmatic?
Yeah.
I'm not sure. But, and I am not sure if I am right the way I see the world, especially now where I have reduced cognition, let's put it that way. Oh, I think, I'm not as fast-firing as I used to. The only thing that is high on my parameter is justice. A peace. You know, that's something I or anybody should not fiddle with.
Yeah.
And look, the world is full of hate and death. I mean, fancy that Sri Lankans being so stupid. The guy killed the Muslim in Christchurch was a lunatic. The people, how could you possibly revenge death by another day? And the people who died because of suicide.
Young. Young men.
And one woman. Yeah. Mm. And, you know, it takes the floodlight away from Somalia, Rwanda, Burundi, South Africa, and Zimbabwe. My God, this asshole is just as bad. Mm.
Yeah.
I think if everybody adopted the adage, do no harm, we'd go a lot further than what we are doing at the moment because politicians do so much harm.
Yeah, I think the victim just applies only to the doctor. If they can't heal that, they must do any harm. Yeah, I think I have it from you. You know the poem by Niemöller.
Yeah.
Things happen when a good people do nothing. I think that makes me mouth. And I caught myself saying nothing when my friend was here who was gay. He said, God, I don't know if you know Paul. And the neighbors were here, the ones that they've got the flag up. They were talking about homosexuals or whatever, before actually it was accepted in Parliament. And because she is very clued up, he is a bit daft, but she's clued up. And she said to me, what's wrong with your eyes? Because when he was talking, I said, but I didn't say, hey, my friend is gay. Don't you dare say it. Which I should have.
Yeah.
And thought, it's useless. You're not going to change their mind.
Well, that's exactly right. And Naomi Klein, in her book, The Shock Doctrine, she says you're wasting oxygen. In trying to convince people who have a different worldview, because you're not going to convince them, and all you're doing is creating a bigger divide than what you currently have.
Yeah.
And repeating it is not on.
But I talked to Paul afterwards. I said, Paul, I'm so ashamed of myself. I didn't say. He said, not worth it. Don't worry.
Exactly.
But it still sticks a bit in my gullet because at least I should have risked that they don't talk to me anymore. That's fine. But I should have said, hang on a bit.
The 10 principles are don't engage. There's 10 principles of when you hear things that are against your principles and what you believe in is the first one, there's 10 of them, but the first one is don't engage. And if the conversation goes on, change it. And just say, I'm really not happy with this conversation, and change it. You don't have to try and convert people, because you're not going to, but all you have to say is, I really don't like this conversation, I'd rather we change it.
Oh, I never thought of that.
Yeah, and that's the first principle. And that way you're not taking part, but neither are you doing what Naomi Klein was talking about and creating a bigger divide.
So do you think
that at the same time they're getting the message that you don't like what they're
saying? And if they keep doing it and you keep saying that, they'll stop, because you're not saying go away, you're not saying I don't agree with you or anything like that. You're just saying, I just don't like this conversation. I'd rather we change it. So they'll stop.
Yeah, I never thought of that because I've always said, but I think I was born with too much testosterone. I think because I was very good mountain climber, so that most people were a bit astonished that we did. I was always with other two when we came to the huts on the top. Oh my God. I put up with a lot of pain. I know once we went in the late afternoon over a glacier and it was snow that much. The top was ice. We had goisera on and I didn't have long socks on the shoulder. And so the ice cut every step into my leg. And by the time I came to the hut, or we came to that, I did, and the next morning it was awful, and I had that. But I didn't say, because I was really never a nice, loving, quiet girl. You know?
I do. I can see it.
Yeah, and even the boys, I had two suitors, they were very serious, and they both knew each other, they were both mountain climbers. And I said, oh no, I'll never get married, I just have to travel the world, which I did afterwards. I thought it was like prison when you are married, you know. I don't know, although my mother and father got on well, but it was more because of my father.
How old were you when you left Austria?
20 when I left Austria. When I left Switzerland for Australia, I was 28.
28. Yeah. Shall we leave it there?
Oh my goodness, did you?
Yeah.